once you know Jew psychology, which very few people in the world do, but a little hint, if you know Jew psychology, then you will know that it is the only satisfaction the Jew gets is not by working with reality, here we go again, or working with nature, not with working with reality and taking advantage of reality, but actually making you believe in a reality that doesn't exist. That's a great satisfaction for the Jew. If you think, if the Jew can make you think that you're sick, that's success. What it is, it's a massive gaslighting operation on a worldwide scale, making you believe something that doesn't exist, making you believe that you're sick, making you believe there's a pandemic, making you put on masks full time, even outside, making you give up your kids, making you mask your kids, making you abuse your children, making you distance yourself from family members, people that are close to you, making you not get together in groups, not being able to share information, making you stop having any type of support from individuals or groups, making you stop reproducing, making you stop even attempting to form a family, taking everything away from you based on something that doesn't even exist, and then making you take the poisonous vaccine which the Jew created. In essence, getting you to kill yourself.
Nixon's own dark view of how the world works, where the enemy is not just the communists, it's also the media. Listening in agreement is the Reverend Billy Graham.
This stranglehold has got to be broken, or this country is going to go down the drain.
You believe that?
Yes, sir.
I can't ever say it, but I believe it.
Let me hear it if you have the Pfizer vaccine. Let me hear it from Moderna. AstraZeneca. Let's hear it from the anti-vaxxers.
Build is one of the largest public education campaigns ever.
President Biden's chief medical advisor says people need what he calls trusted messengers.
The White House has now recruited TikTokers, YouTubers, and more.
The Ad Council will be briefing influencers, including some very big celebrities, on how to direct their followers to trusted vaccine content.
The goal, convince Americans, get the COVID vaccine.
It's vaccination day. It's vaccination day.
It's vaccination day.
Today I get my COVID jab, and I'm feeling really fab. For months I have been waiting for this day.
R-O-N-A-V-I-R-U-S-19. Masked up with my team to smash back the disease, and we dreamed about the day that we'd have a vaccine. Yeah, now that human-made miracle is finally here. Time to take a shot.
It's Megan Thee Stallion, Ariana Grande, and Jimmy Fallon. Y'all know what time it is. It's time to get those boosters.
Ain't in real life, you need to vax that thing. Y'all feeling freaky all night, you need to vax that thing.
If you wanna get sticky and hot, go get the shot.
Grab your syringe, but make sure you clean it. Come stick it in me like you really mean it.
It seems so sexy to inoculate.
Vaccine, vaccine, till I get the vaccine. Vaccine, now come for vaccine.
No more cutting your own hair now. Vaccine's on its way. Oh, 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 got the vaccine and it's being
the doctor that was in charge of my case
told me to get used to being handicapped, which, excuse me.
I never thought I would never be able to get up and go to the bathroom.
I took him to get the vaccine. That was the last time I spoke to him.
Family says the mother and grandmother was healthy before she got her shot and that her sudden death came as a shock.
I was literally just following doctor's orders, following the government mandates and others in my life.
Now states and companies are going all out, providing incentives to those who have not been vaccinated.
States are ramping up those incentives, everything from cash prizes to college scholarships.
New York State raffling off 50 scholarships to 12 to 17-year-olds who get vaccinated.
You're worried about paying college tuition? Tell your 12 to 17-year-old, get a shot.
Thousands of prizes available,
including cruises and Super Bowl tickets.
They're giving away Ford F-150 trucks. They're giving away shotguns and hunting rifles as well.
Marijuana dispensaries are giving away
joints for jabs.
Krispy Kreme announcing this week a free donut.
And yes, free beers.
That's right. Get a shot and have a beer.
Today could be your lucky day if you've gotten at least one COVID vaccination shot.
California's vaccine lottery.
That's right. You could win $1 million.
$1 million.
One grand winner to take home.
Up to $5 million if you get vaccinated next week.
$5 million.
You guys weren't expecting that one, were you?
They made it exciting, right? There's a reason people go to Vegas.
It really could be somewhat lucrative for them to get vaccinated if they aren't already persuaded.
Just think of this when you think of vaccination. Mmm. Vaccination.
If you need luck with love, dating apps are offering incentives too.
We have finally found the one thing that makes us all more attractive, a vaccination.
I don't mean to brag, but I want you to know, double vaxxed, booster, never got COVID, clearly Jesus loves me the most.
Comedian Heather McDonald collapsed over the weekend during a show.
Her management saying she suffered a skull fracture in the fall.
The CDC has confirmed
higher than normal cases
of heart inflammation in 16 to 24-year-olds.
You take all of the vaccines since 2010, and you compare 2021, this thing blows through the roof.
80% of the cases have been in young boys and young men.
I am in the hospital with heart complications from the COVID-19 vaccine.
The 14-year-old's heart stopped.
A 15-year-old boy died
after receiving his first dose.
16-year-old was rushed to the hospital.
Loved ones say the 17-year-old heart stopped.
The elite runner was rushed to the hospital after suffering a heart attack.
A high school football player has died
just hours after getting his second
dose of COVID vaccine.
After collapsing on the football field.
After collapsing in the middle of a game.
Collapsing during the game.
Collapsing on the tennis court.
Suddenly collapsing.
The player collapsed.
Collapsed and died.
Died after collapsing.
He collapsed.
Seems that there's a second player who's collapsed.
This is unusual.
I've never seen anything like this. Yes, what's going on?
What's happening?
That is the big question. What caused this?
There has been a sharp rise in unexplained deaths during the pandemic.
The number of deaths with unknown causes has gone up over the last 3 years.
Deaths that are not listed as COVID-related.
I'm sorry, I'm feeling really dizzy.
Healthy young people are dying suddenly from a mysterious syndrome.
Sudden adult death syndrome.
SADS is an umbrella term to describe unexpected deaths in young people.
There is some evidence that some sort of delayed reaction to COVID.
My son is dead because he took the vaccine. They're lying.
We just want help and to be heard and make things weird for others so this doesn't happen to anyone else.
We just want you guys to believe that this is real. We are real people experiencing these side effects.
Breaking news from the FDA, which has just approved the emergency use of the Pfizer vaccine for children ages 5 to 11.
And we've already secured enough vaccine supply for every single child in America.
A new proposal would allow children 12 and older get vaccinated with no parental consent.
A mom in Louisiana plans to sue her son's high school after he was vaccinated at the school without parental consent.
Some new moms now quarantining from their newborns.
By the end of this year, Dr. Fauci believes there will be a vaccine available
for kids as young as 6 months.
And that means millions of young children can get their first dose right now.
This is like a gift from God.
Getting that shot really was an amazing feeling. It hits you.
Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin.
What is the problem? Get over it.
Come on, people, just get the shot.
It's what we've been waiting for, to embrace all that life has in store. It's time to make new memories.
Once you got the vaccine,
hug your family.
It's time to hug your family.
Feeling so relieved.
Oh,
no lockdowns, we're free.
Let's talk about some of the sort of the confusion that came out over the last few years. I think I've asked you about this, but I want to check in one more time. Did ivermectin do anything?
No.
Okay. Humans do take it, but not for this purpose.
Right. It does not help with COVID, and it could be dangerous.
Okay. Hydroxychloroquine, did it do anything?
No.
No. So people who hoarded that?
No.
No reason to have done that. Okay.
Right.
Just checking.
Just, you got it.
For a friend.
You got it right.
Okay. Can you get a flu shot and a booster shot together at the same time?
Yes.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Short answer. How often will we be getting boosted for the rest of our lives?
We don't know that. You have to be perfectly honest. We would hope that you do not have to do that, but if we have to do that at least for the next few years until this gets so low, it's essentially a non-entity, it is conceivable that we might have to get a regular booster similar to what we do with influenza.
Okay. How can people safely gather for the holidays?
Well, there are a number of ways. First of all, get vaccinated. Encourage the people, your family and your friends, who you're going to be interacting with at the holidays to get vaccinated.
How do you convince friends or family members who will not get vaccinated? Let's say I have someone I love very much,
right,
and who I do not judge them for not right. doing this, but I just worry them. I worry so much right. about them for not doing it because if they have other conditions, and if they got this, right. it would be terrible for them. What's the argument here?
Well, the argument is you look at the data, and the data are absolutely crystal clear.
Is the science in on whether the vaccine is safe?
Oh, without a doubt. It's been given to billions of people in billions of doses. So there's no doubt safety is off the table. There's no doubt it's safe. But the important point is that if you reason with people and show the statistics of the number of hospitalizations and deaths among unvaccinated people compared to people who are vaccinated and up to date on their booster, the curves go hospitalization and death for people unvaccinated, hospitalization and deaths for people who are vaccinated. To have people just look at the data, that's not going to convince everybody. But for people who at least put a little bit stock in data, they should understand that.
Another piece of data that we've been looking at is our international colleagues who are ahead of us both in the Delta surge as well as have vaccinated a few weeks ahead of us in terms of large portions of their population that have been vaccinated. And data we've seen from our international colleagues, specifically and especially Israel, have demonstrated a worsening of infections amongst vaccinated people over time.
A worsening of infections amongst vaccinated people over time. A worsening of infections amongst vaccinated people over time.
And so we remain concerned about that as we see in the context of Delta variant, some breakthroughs that are occurring and decreased vaccine effectiveness that is occurring in the context of infection. We are watching other countries, the experience of other countries carefully, and concerned that we too will see what Israel is seeing, which is worsening infections over time.
One positive element of this COVID crime is that it has truly exposed the normies. It has truly exposed the psychology of the normie. And we are not to stand in the way of the normie. Let them have the vaccine. Let them have their masks. Let them have their fate. The world has changed. The world has changed greatly, and whatever you perceive the world as being prior to COVID is no longer the world that you're experiencing right now. You gotta understand this, okay? You don't live in that world anymore, even though you were deceived in that world also, thinking that you were free. But now, you're not even being deceived to think that you're free. Now they're declaring it that you're not free. And of course, the American in 1948, the American the average moron, the fucking moron American, North American, not just in the USA, would be completely oblivious to any of this, any of the realities of the world. I mean, what were they doing? You know, they're buying these large cars and homes in the suburbs and going to church and watching sports and television. They're getting ready to massive amounts of television, and the Jew is right there going, you know what's coming. You don't know what's coming, is what the Jew said. Well, we're going to do a little cultural revolution. We're going to do a little sexual revolution. And how about a little feminism? Have you heard of feminism? You know what that is? Well, that's really simple. We'll get some lesbian Jews pretending to be women, and we're going to get them to make the women believe that they hate men. So instead of bringing men and women together, we're going to repel them from each other.
Well, one of the things they told me was that he was at the house one night, and we were talking, and he started laughing. He said, "Aaron, what do you think women's liberation was about?" And I said, I'm pretty conventional thinking about it at that point. I said, I think it's about women having the right to work, getting equal pay with men, just like they won the right to vote, you know? And he started to laugh. He said, "You're an idiot." And I said, "Why am I an idiot?" He said, "Let me tell you what that was about. We, the Rockefellers, funded that. We funded Women's Lib, you know? And we're the ones who got all over the newspapers and television, the Rockefeller Foundation." He says, "And you want to know why?" He says, "There were two primary reasons. And they were, one reason was we couldn't tax half the population before Women's Lib. And the second reason was now we get the kids in school at an early age. We can indoctrinate the kids how to think. It breaks up the family. The kids start looking at the state as the family, as the school, as the officials, as their family, not as the parents teaching them." And so those are the two primary reasons for Women's Lib, which I thought up to that point was a noble thing. You know, when I saw their intentions behind it, where they were coming from when they created it, the thought of it, I saw the evil behind what I thought was a noble venture.
Doesn't it seem like some white men are really angry lately?
Not all white men.
I said some. According to precarious man theory, when men don't feel masculine, they tend to act out in stereotypical gendered ways, which is why you're getting pushback from the men in your life for just existing. But it's not you. It's white men. They're a little fragile right now. Here's why. See, white men used to be able to raise a family, buy a house, and retire on one salary, their own. But thanks to growing income inequality, that's something white men can't do anymore. And that's throwing off some really comfy gender norms. You know what else white men can't do anymore? Afford to keep a full-time spouse at home, have job security, depend on federal mortgage programs to help them buy a house, and rely on subsidized high-quality healthcare, subsidized retirement programs, and Social Security. These entitlement programs were part of the privilege of being a white man. And it must be enraging to watch them slowly slip away at the hands of growing income inequality. But you know who else is angry? Women and people who aren't white. See, we've been excluded from these programs for longer than we've been included in them. And we're really mad about it too. So I say welcome, white men. You've officially joined the fucked over club. You can now join the ranks of most of the United States. We get that you're angry, and while it's not our fault, we can totally empathize with your loss of privileges, even though we've never had them. But don't listen to me, an angry lesbian. Let a white man tell you the exact same thing.
Once upon a time, we had 98%
of all of the positions of power. And now we only have like 88%. And we think, oh my God, women are taking over.
This is Dr. Michael Kimmel. He's one of the world's leading experts on men and masculinity.
Once upon a time, the whole world was a locker room. The boardroom of the company was a locker room. The operating theater in the hospital was a locker room. The law firm was a locker room. The military was a locker room. The locker room was a locker room. Everywhere you went, it was all guys. But now, women have entered every single one of those arenas. The change in our lives has taken place so bewilderingly fast that so many men feel like, what happened? And now you're getting all the advantages. Women are getting everything. The guys who are the angriest are the ones who said, I made a bargain with this society.
Fetish for manufacturing is part of the general fetish for keeping white males of low education outside the cities in the powerful positions they're in the U.S. And that is really what's going on here. Because when you look at the costs of manufacturing, and Susan Houseman and her co-authors have done a lot, not of manufacturing, of trade, and job displacement and community. Susan Houseman and her co-authors have done a lot of work on this, and I'm sure she'll have a different view than I do. But when I look at the so-called costs of the China shock or the costs of the decline in manufacturing, I always think compared to what? For decades, there was enormous displacement of African Americans in this economy. Every time there was a recession, African American unemployment rates shot up much faster and higher than white unemployment. Single women were methodically excluded from the workforce, and especially if they became parents, or ghettoed in particular sets of jobs throughout the economy well through the 70s into the 80s. Displacements on large scales would happen when technology or trade broke through, like all the secretaries who got replaced by personal computers and other forms of office animation. Automation. And these kinds of churn, as the economists put it, never were decried. They never got political attention. They never got much notice. But when it started being the white male manufacturing people in the so-called heartland, which by definition was not urban, then suddenly this was a crisis.
Generation back from the war, fighting those evil Nazis, they had no clue what feminism is. I just wait till you find out. We've got your kids. We've got their mind. And then they said, well, how about a little civil rights movement? What the hell's that? Well, that's when we use the blacks and turn them against you. How about that? What? The Negroes? Yeah, the Negroes. But that's not it. That's not all. Homosexuals. Homosexuals? But we don't know any homosexuals. You're gonna know a lot of them now. They're gonna be all over. Everywhere. Homosexuals? Everywhere? Homosexuals are going to be everywhere in your face. And you're going to bow to homosexuals. Yeah. We're going to lionize the homosexual. the homosexuals can be the avant-garde of humanity. Yeah, gonna turn them against you also.
Now, I'm not no Black Lives Matter supporter.
Like, you're not? You
know, no, absolutely.
Why not?
Because it's not our movement. This is a movement that was given to us by, you know, George Soros and his fucking boys. Because they saw how things were going and they didn't want it to go back to the 60s to where we start having our own organic movements. That was a big fucking problem for them. So let's give the people a movement that we can control. We'll provide them the leaders and all of this type of shit. And yeah, that's what Black Lives Matter is. Look at the leaders of Black Lives Matter.
Are there leaders of Black Lives Matter?
Yeah.
Who?
Look at these lesbian women who are trying to incorporate, you know, LG, whatever the fuck the letters are, incorporate those, their concerns into black people's concerns. Go to the website, look it up. Google George Soros and Black Lives Matter, see what comes up.
Let's look it up.
Okay. Y'all out there, George Soros is a fucking multi-billionaire down with, you know, some of the 12 richest people in the fucking world.
He raised $100 million.
Yep.
For the Black Lives Matter Coalition. The funding comes in addition to more than $33 million in grants from top Democratic Party donor George Soros. Okay, here we go. Okay, so,
What billionaire would have done that for the Black Panther Party?
$33 million. Well, hold on.
Huh?
Hold on.
That's not what that is about. That's about, let us give you a movement that we can control, use certain symbolism from the original civil rights movement, like the black, you know, red, black, and green, all these different symbols. We're going to incorporate that, but only it's going to be a movement that we control. We decide what the messages are. We decide what the slogans are. You know, what happened to no justice, no peace, and, you know, no peace, no justice. Now it's hands up, don't shoot, fucking I can't breathe, and all these negative affirmations that, you know, who made that shit up? You know what I mean? Wasn't me, you know? And like, we're living in a time of great social engineering, okay? Now, if y'all don't know what social engineering is, go look it up. Like, there's people out there that know how to scientifically make society do what they want it to do, how they want it to be done. They're engineering how society should be. That's social engineering. So when we sit here and talk about, you know, things like false evolution, you know, when we say, oh, hip hop's just going that way. No, it's not. It was socially engineered to go in the way that it's going right now. You see, this Black Lives Matter is a social engineering of how a civil rights movement should move. You see what I'm saying? And this is what we have to look at. Not everything is organic.
Well, you also don't see any clear leaders in Black Lives Matter. You had D-Ray. He's been kind of the face of Black Lives Matter for a while.
Why? When he's not the leader. You see what I'm saying?
There's no real
leader. Why is he? There is leaders. This is what I'm telling you. They're lesbians. They're black lesbians. Go to the fucking website. Who runs the shit?
Is there a website?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because when I looked at Black Lives BLM leader, the key people there's no leader that's listed, but the key people that are listed is Sean King, DeRay McKeeson, and Janetta Elzey.
Those people don't run Black Lives Matter. Although they might be the face right now, they're not the ones calling the shots.
You want to talk about power? You get close to offending a Jew, you lost your job. You get close to saying something that a Jew might not like, You need to be retrained and reprogrammed. I'm a grown ass man and or woman. You don't need to reprogram me, you dick. The fact that Jews think they got that much damn gravitas to where I need to be reprogrammed and sit down with one of they motherfucking rabbis. Fuck you and your rabbi. I gotta sit down and have this nigga I've never met program me? Bullshit. I don't know you. And then we sit down like kids listening to this motherfucking lox and bagel eating ass nigga tell us about his religion. And I'm supposed to just, oh, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right. Y'all don't think about how stupid this sounds? Got old kids, and I'm up here just a begging. Yes, sir, boss, I'm sorry, boss. Yes, sir, boss, I'm sorry, boss. Sorry I said something, boss. Sorry I said, I didn't really say anything, but I got too close. Sorry, boss, sorry, boss. When's the last time a white person had your black ass somewhere begging and asking for forgiveness? When the last time your ass had to learn something about Christopher Columbus? Had to learn something about Queen Elizabeth? When the last time your black ass had to learn something about Andrew Jackson? When the last time your black ass had to be forced to sit down by some white man to listen about his ass and his damn Christianity and his damn Catholicism? When the last time a white man was able to punk your black ass like that? Because you said something about them? Because you called them an animal, because you called them the devil, because you called them anything. You want to sit up there and have Jews tell you about how bad black people, white people are, but they the ones that got your ass crying and begging and shit. Who's your real master, black folks? Who your real master? You won't get this from nobody else. Have y'all heard any of the shit I'm saying on any other program before I said it? That's why I love waiting to speak. So y'all can know I ain't get it from another nigga, cause you heard me speak after another nigga. And you can't say, oh, he took this person's talking points. He sounds like so-and-so. No, he don't, because nobody's going to tell you this. When you swear you got people on your side and you, no, you don't. Them people ain't on your motherfucking side. I'll be arrested one day soon. I'll be behind bars. They'll let one of these puss-ass niggas come and try to do something to me. I'll be somewhere performing. It'll be a bitch nigga that pop up out of somewhere talking about, I'm gonna kill you for the black race. That's not who's going to do it. That'll be the face that's on it. Y'all hear me? That'll be the face that's on it. Oh, but that won't be who did it. That won't be who did it. It'll go down in black on black crime. Them niggers did this to them niggers. Don't worry about it. Nope. So you better listen while you can listen, and you better take notes while you motherfucking can. Because the sad thing about us is we don't realize everything that we have in front of us is fleeting. You think it's going to be there for the rest of your damn life. You think it's always going to be there. Those of you who have children know that your children grew up real damn fast. These things change. The things you guys were watching on television 5 years ago, you're no longer watching them. The people you thought were popular 5 years ago, somebody else has popped up and is now popular 5 years later. That's how shit works. So you better start taking notes. Because one day, that source is going to be gone. You got Jews telling you how bad whites are. But whites don't have as much power as Jews. Jews are so crafty, they started a museum about Hollywood and kept their own names out of the museum about Hollywood because they knew it would give credence to everybody saying they own Hollywood. They have a black section of this museum, a woman section of this museum, but they will not big up the people who started Hollywood and currently run it. Are you telling me they're ashamed of it? Have you noticed they get mad when you make jokes about Jews being good with money? Why are they upset about being good with money? That makes no fucking sense. Until you look at the context of it, that a lot of countries, they were kicked out because of how they handled money. What is the greatest trick that the devil played on man? That he didn't exist. He's not real. And the Jewish supremacy, they make sure they hide it in plain sight.
I think what annoys me most about white people is when they pretend like they're the victim. What's also annoying is when they kill us.
What is fragile about whiteness when everything has been constructed around it?
Every part of who I am has been distorted or criminalized.
It's really just a bunch of white lies.
We're storming the Capitol!
You're not patriots. You're ridiculous.
One of the definitions of American whiteness is ignorance.
White people, we are not your problem. You are.
The truth has to be told about history.
We have to make sure that these stories are told from our perspective.
There's always hope. You know what I'm saying? We don't give up.
It's about obliterating systemic and institutionalized racism.
This is a wild place, y'all. It's a wild place. I know Harriet and Frederick be up there just like, what is they gonna do?
Should white people today feel any responsibility for slavery?
Hell yeah.
In May, The Washington Times sent journalist David Mills to interview Professor Griff. A number of topics were discussed, but when the article was published, all the attention focused on one sentence. Griff reportedly told Mills, "Jews are responsible for the majority of wickedness that goes on across the globe." With the media scrutinizing their every move, it was a PR disaster. The resulting fallout threatened to end Public Enemy's career. It wasn't the first time Griff had brought up contentious issues in the press. The band often discussed ideas about how to regain a consciousness for African Americans, and this often spilled over into the black community's relationship with other ethnic groups.
I just finished reading The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, which was given to me by somebody in Public Enemy. This conversation was going on all the time about the control and who owns these companies and, you know, why all this group of people always doing this and controlling that and having this kind of influence. And that talk went on all the time, every day.
Whether Griff's words were reported correctly or not, the resulting media storm required swift action from the band's leader, Chuck D.
I remember being around at that time, you know, and how tough that decision was for Chuck. It was difficult, difficult. I mean, think about it. They were the biggest rap group and one of the biggest pop groups in the world at that time. And you're told you got to get rid of one of your best friends out of the band because of his anti-Semitism. That's a lot of weight.
Def Jam's publicist Bill Adler refused to work with the group, and criticism from the world's media continued to build. Public Enemy's mission to change the consciousness of a generation was about to be wrecked by one interview. Chuck had to act to save his group. He released a statement, apologized, and sacked Griff.
I used to travel with suitcases full of books. Hell, I was a minister of information. So I came with 20, 30 books, and we was just kind of going over some of the information in the books. I think I had Henry Ford's book, The International Jew, The Octopus. So if you're talking about world wars, then who was responsible? If you're talking about the Civil War and you're talking about black people being brought over from Africa to America in the holds of ships, who owned the insurance companies? Who owned the ships? And that's the kind of discussion we were having.
Okay.
Because the information that I gave in the interview wasn't from Griff. It was from Jewish scholars. I didn't write it. So it's like, wow. Okay.
And who were the owners of these slave ships? Who were the biggest slavers in the 16th century? The Ashkenazi were the biggest slavers in the 16th and 17th century. going into the 18th century. You see, Ashkenazi slaving was huge. This is from, I have to be careful when I say this, so my sources, it's always best to go with Jewish sources, right? Because you just trod on a bunch of toes. So we'll go with the Jewish sources. There's a ton of sources out there, but I'll stick with the Jewish ones because that's just safer. The Jewish scholar Jonathan Shorshek says this: Jewish merchants routinely possessed enormous numbers of slaves temporarily before selling them off. If a slave auction fell on a Jewish festival, it was postponed due to lack of buyers and sellers. The Jews of Suriname gave their slave plantations Hebrew names such as Machanaim, Nachamu, and Goshen. Rabbi Herbert Bloom adds that the slave trade was one of the most important Jewish activities. Jewish slaving is in fact confirmed by the Jewish Encyclopedia.
And this will be like showing a vampire the cross. Or throwing holy water on a vampire. See, because the worst thing that a deceiver wants is for the people deceived to find the truth. Black folk picking cotton. Listen good now. Cotton was then what oil is now. The largest producer of oil in the world are the rich. With rich ones, and the strategic interests of America means in order for them to rule, they have to link with where the oil is coming from and take it or maneuver to get it, but they must have oil. In the time of slavery, it was cotton. And it's interesting that the cotton would come down the Mississippi, New Orleans to the Gulf, from Biloxi, Mississippi, and from Mobile, Alabama, and the cotton would come down and go up to New York, where the brethren of the Jewish people in the South, in the North, were the masters of the needle trades. And they had their brothers also in the South taking the lint from the cotton and producing cloth through weaving. But these were Jewish people owning the land. They were the majority. They were the merchants. They were the traders. They knew how to hook up with their brethren in the North. And they would send raw cotton to the mills in England, in Manchester, Leeds, and Bristol, and the British would turn it into cloth and then sell it all over the world. The Rothschilds became rich from cotton. The Lehman Brothers became rich from cotton in Alabama, then moved to New York and Wall Street. I know the truth. And somebody gotta tell it or die trying.
Run on for a long time, run on or later gotta put you down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time, sooner or later gotta put you down.
A few people who understand the Jew, and then the rest of them are in this trance of induced mental illness. They're living in a false reality. So we're living in two realities. We're living in a actual reality, and we're living under a false reality. So if you step outside your door, you're going to be entering a false reality where you yourself are living the actual reality, but everybody else is not. This latent mental illness within them that has been activated by the Jew, and when I talk about the Jew, I'm talking about mainstream media, I'm talking about social media, I'm talking about the economic pressures, I'm talking about the politics of any geographical area, nation, I'm talking about the politics of any institution that you may have anything to do with and that you step into, such as academia, law enforcement, the legal system, government, civil service. They all function under the same deviant Jew politics.
White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison. Running through, it really is. Running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and forcefully as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. None. White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison. Running through, it really is. running through our body politic, and it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and forcefully as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. It's a poison running through our, it really is. Running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and forcefully as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. None.
Get up, bro. Hurry up. When it's up your ass again.
I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
Now, this Zionist boasts that Jews are leading the efforts for mass immigration and multiculturalism in Europe. Well, the Zionists have already ethnically cleansed the Palestinians. Why not do the same thing to Europeans and Americans? Barbara Spector says Europeans resent the Jewish role in leading the ethnic cleansing of the European people. And you know, she's right. We resent the hell out of it. My question to her is, what the hell are you doing in Sweden anyway? If you love Israel so much, go to Israel and take your multicultural propaganda with you. Your Zionist racist state of Israel proclaims itself an exclusively Jewish state. It is the world's most restrictive immigration laws. A Jew in Sweden, or for that matter in Australia, who's never stepped one foot in Israel, can get boxfuls of money to move to Israel, while Palestinians can't even return to the homes they were born in. Why doesn't this Jewish racist protest the segregation of non-Jews that goes on in Israel and housing, whole towns, settlements, schools, and businesses, and even in the occupied territories that they stole from the Palestinians? Why won't the media expose Israel as it condemned South African segregation? Why does this Jewish hypocrite try to destroy the harmony and beautiful heritage Sweden has enjoyed for thousands of years? What really motivates her and the rest of these Jewish supremacists?
Oh, here you go. You got people coming in now. Take a look at this. A lot of young adult men being let through now. So every person who was just let through is appears to be a single adult male.
So we are just on the Texas side of the Rio Grande River at about the point where thousands and thousands of Haitians are crossing over into the city of Del Rio, and there are over 10,000 now that are just being allowed to pour over the border. They seem to mostly be Haitians. There's also some Cubans among them, but really a vast majority of them seem to be Haitian, the ones that I've talked to. That right there is the international bridge, providing some shelter and cover for these immigrants who are being allowed to just cross over. And
where there is a denial of reality, the lack of acceptance of the normie is when you suggest that a complete race of individuals, specifically one race, one entire race, working as a monolith, and ideologically driven to commit all these acts and to control the world. Doesn't that sound fucking preposterous? And we all wish that it was. See, they don't know the Jew. They don't know what Tikkun Olam means, is all about. They don't know that the Jew is spiritually driven to commit what most non-Jews would consider evil incessantly without stopping throughout the centuries, to do what a Jew is supposed to do. The normie is ignorant. The normie is uneducated. The normie is indoctrinated. See, that's too much. That's incomprehensible.
That's
totally crossing the line. Totally. That's impossible for the normie to believe or to even contemplate. Listen carefully. When you suggest that it's not selected few individuals, evil individuals that are doing it, if you tell them it's not specific individuals, you tell them it's an entire race. Did you hear what I said, brother-in-law? It's one specific race and no one else. Not individuals, a whole race. If you say that this character is evil and responsible, and that character is evil and responsible, and you know that billionaire, ugly, Hermit the Frog sounding guy in a sweater, yes, he's the main guy, you're going to get agreement. But then when you put it together for them and say, do you know what they all have in common? And then you say to them, do you know why? It's an ideology. It's written, as my previous lecture suggested, it's written. It's written for them to do exactly what they're doing to you and to us. It's written. It's not one individual. It's not the old creepy guy who pretends to be an immunology expert, or the other creepy guy that pretends to be a software engineer that he never was. He's a total fraud, like Freud and Einstein. It's not just them. It's the race. And they gotta do what they gotta do.
It's the end of days. You're gonna need the iron of Esav, which represents Edom, which is the West, Europe, and the Americas, to get intermixed with Yishmael, which is basically Arabs and Muslims. How in the world was this ever going to happen if not for this refugee crisis? At the end of days, you're going to have this intermixing between Esav, Edom, which is the West, and the East, which is the Muslims and the Arabs, making this through this influx into the world. And they're going to have children, you know, I don't want to say by the dozens, but they're going to have a far larger birth rate than the indigenous people there, and they're going to sort of conquer by number. And there are many different sources for this. One of them in Yehezkel, chapter 14, and many other sources as far as this is concerned, where it's mentioned very, very vividly what will happen to the Jews and what will happen to Yerushalayim and what will happen to the world at that time, where there will be many, many people killed and so on and so forth. So the idea of having these refugees come into Europe, it's no longer a matter of whether it's right or wrong. It's just simply fulfillment of what it was meant to be all along. This is the fulfillment of, you know, the Hazal and the prophecies. This has to happen, and this is just another sign that we are nearing, you know, the completion of this tikkun of the entire world.
In America today, we have white supremacy. In the Torah, we had Amalek. Amalek is seen as the eternal enemy of our people, whose members found strength by making us suffer. Therefore, when the Lord your God grants you safety from all your enemies around you, and the land that the Lord your God is giving to you as a hereditary portion, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Our rabbinic sages parse these sentences and derive two distinct meanings. Blotting out the memory of Amalek is a military command, literally to destroy Amalek. Now facing today's Amalek, we are reminded that the Torah calls us not just to escape, but to extirpate Amalek. We are commanded to do real and literal battle against it. That means coming off the bench in the fight against white supremacy. It means putting our reputations and our money and our physical bodies on the line. But also so that we are ready to answer people with radically destructive and incoherent versions of history, so that we can counter white supremacists, so that we can counter Amalek and blot them out by retaining on our lips and in our records their history.
So we have an entire program called Immigration Nation, and we're trying to make sure that the Jewish community steps up to the plate and the broader interfaith community.
Middle East correspondent Ariel Osirandan. Detail, just what role did Israel have in this?
So there's still emerging details from this, but what we know, as you mentioned, 41 Afghans evacuated through Tajikistan, which borders with Afghanistan, to the UAE, and from there they will continue to Canada. Now, I-24 News has learned that the sides negotiated with the Taliban to enable this evacuation. We're talking about sides involved, the U.S., the U.K., and an Israeli humanitarian organization.
Tell us a little bit about the efforts of your organization and how you do it. I'm sure it's a very complicated mission these days.
It is. It's extremely chaotic. Shai Fund is working cooperatively with a consortium of other NGOs to organize the evacuation effort out of Kabul, Afghanistan. We specifically are working with grassroots foundations on the ground.
And how do you do it from here in Israel? I know the NGO is actually registered in the U.S., correct?
That's correct.
But still, some of the work, I guess, or some of the efforts are done from here. How do you guys do it? And what is your specific part? What is your expertise? And who do you partner with? Who actually operates these flights?
We're partnering with a number of NGOs who are organizing the flights. We're also partnering with a lot of NGOs and organizations on the ground in Kabul, and they are communicating with us the list of people and people that they know who've worked with them.
Minority together in such a way that it makes it impossible for the legacy of whiteness to continue to reproduce itself.
Thank you.
We are told, we are commanded by Hashem to make real and apparent in this world all aspects of the Torah, all the entire plan that Hashem lays out for us in the Torah, that is laid out for us in the Nevi'im. It is our duty and our responsibility and our destiny to make this happen in the real world.
The fact is that Jewish races push diversity for every people and nation on earth but their own. Here's a method of their madness. No group on earth fights harder for its interests than do Jews. By dividing a society, they can weaken it and achieve their agenda. Former Israeli Prime Minister Moshe Sheret, in his diaries, told how Israel purposely promoted civil war, conflict, hatred between Christians and Muslims in Lebanon to lessen their ability to defend themselves from Israel. Israel's war criminal, Ariel Sharon, purposefully arranged the mass murder of over 1,000 Muslims in Beirut to increase the hate between Muslims and Christians there. And you know they're doing the same thing today all over the world. Europeans are rightfully concerned about massive immigration into our homelands. Just as any good Muslim in the Muslim world would oppose massive immigration of European Christians in their own nations to the point they would be supplanted in their own land. But let me tell you, it is not the Muslims who've changed the immigration policies of Europe and America. Muslims don't run the media that tells Swedes and Germans and Britons and Americans that they must let themselves be ethnically cleansed in our own homelands. Arabs don't run the kosher Hollywood media that teaches Europeans to hate themselves so much that some even celebrate our own extinction.
Godfather of the European Union, Richard Kutanov Kalergi, published the plan for a united Europe and the ethnocide of the peoples of Europe. The encouragement of mass non-white immigration was central to the plot. Since then, an unholy alliance of leftists, capitalists, and Zionist supremacists has schemed to promote immigration and miscegenation with the deliberate aim of breeding us out of existence in our own homelands. As indigenous resistance to this human genetic modification industry grows, the criminal elite seeks new ways to camouflage their project. First, their immigrant pawns were temporary guest workers. Then it was a multiracial experiment. Then they were refugees. Then the answer to a shrinking population. Different excuses, different lies. And asylum is just another one. But the real aim stays the same. The biggest genocide in human history. The final solution of the Christian-European problem. This crime demands a new set of Nuremberg trials, and you people will be in the dock.
Is Israel a racist country? As Black Lives Matter resonates around the world, where is the outrage for black lives in Israel? Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu plans to deport 40,000 African refugees, mainly from Eritrea and Sudan, to another country in Africa or back home. He calls them illegal infiltrators, criminals, economic opportunists, and says they're worse than terrorists.
הדבר הנורא ביותר. הצפה של מסתננים בלתי חוקיים מאפריקה.
Even some rabbis have joined in the racist rhetoric, comparing African people to monkeys.
כל כושי מברכי, אלא צריך שיהיה כושי שאבא שלו ואימא שלו לבנים, איפה אתה תדע? אם אתה יודע, כופה שאתה יודע,
These are asylum seekers we're talking about, like those from Eritrea, which is also referred to as Africa's North Korea, the same country Netanyahu wants to send these refugees back to. It's one of the highest refugee-producing countries in the world, even with a population of only around 5 million. A report by the UN has found that people in Eritrea face an authoritarian government, rape, torture, forced labor, and enslavement. Aren't these good enough reasons to flee a country? And we can't ignore the situation in Sudan. It's even featured on lists like this. As if the life of these asylum seekers isn't hard enough. Now they're being persecuted for trying to seek refuge in Israel, the same country that's supposed to be a democratic nation. Israel was one of the first of 145 nations to sign the UN Convention on Refugees, which obligates Israel to help those in life-threatening situations. Instead, many have been locked up in prisons, placed in ghettos in impoverished parts of Tel Aviv, and denied work.
The whole of Israel will ultimately be fenced off for its own protection, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed. Inspecting the construction of a new barrier along the country's border with Jordan, he used strong language to evoke the threat. We'll surround Israel in its entirety? The answer is yes. In the environment we live in, we need to protect ourselves from predatory animals.
So, one of the things during the years is that Israel decided if we can't send them back to their country of origin, we're going to try and send them somewhere else. So part of this anti-infiltration law that was established in 2012 was the opening of something called the Hulot Detention Center. And Mr. Eli Yishai, who was the Interior Minister in 2012, stated very clearly what the intention was. He said, if we can't deport them, we will make their lives miserable until they choose to voluntarily leave.
אם יתנו לי את כל הכלים, ואני פועל להשיג את כל הכלים, וזה לא קל. אם יתנו לי את כל הכלים בלי יוצא מן הכלל, תוך פחות משנה לא יישאר בארץ ישראל אפילו מסתנן אחד.
And so what would happen was, people would be summoned to the Hulot Detention Center, and they would be given a nice brochure, in the other hand, which said, voluntary leave.
The detention facilities under construction are set to house between 8,000 to 10,000 illegal migrants.
אחד הסיבות לירידה המשמעותית והדרמטית במסתננים, הגדר מחד ומידך העובדה שהם נכנסים לתקופה ממושכת של 3 שנים לבתוך בית סוהר. וממודים למשפחות שלהם ולכן הירידה היא מאוד מאוד משמעותית.
Yishai vowed that he'd work to expel all migrants who are not legitimate refugees, which he said includes all but a small number of over 60,000 migrants currently in Israel. He added that more detention facilities must be built in order to make the message clear that it is not possible to enter the country illegally.
You can, if you would like, go back to your country or go to another country that we have organized for you. We will pay for the flight ticket and we will also give you a $3,500 departure gift and you can go and start your life there. The third country was never mentioned what it was. It was another African country that Israel had organized for them. As soon as Israel started sending people to third countries, the hotline, the organization where I work for, began monitoring what is really going on in these third countries. The state never said what the name is. Even to people who were leaving, they never had any documentation until they arrived in the airport that said where they were going. And we knew that they were going to Uganda and Rwanda. They passed it was just a policy amendment saying that they are going to issue deportation orders to the third countries, and anyone who doesn't comply, they're going to put them in a proper detention, closed detention, not like this open Hulot detention center that they had created, in a proper closed detention center until they agree to leave. So they had been smuggled from Rwanda to Uganda, then to South Sudan, Sudan, Libya, across the Mediterranean, and to Europe. Every single one of them had either been given refugee status in Europe or were waiting to hear from their refugee claim in Europe. Where in Israel they had been called infiltrators over and over, in Europe they were found to be refugees. The report based on these 19 testimonies said, the conclusion was that throughout the journey the refugees were subjected to human trafficking, incarceration, the threat of forcible deportation to Eritrea, harsh conditions of starvation, violence, slavery and torture camps in Libya, and a dangerous crossing of the Mediterranean Sea from Libya to Europe. Many witnessed the death of fellow travelers. Among the dead were others who had left Israel voluntarily. It says in the report that 18 of the 19 interviews were conducted in Hebrew. There is today in Europe a Hebrew-speaking Eritrean diaspora of people who lived for anywhere between 5 to 10 years in Israel, who learned the language, who worked, who paid taxes, who lived amongst us, and then were sent away.
Waiting to help them on the beaches of Greece are the last people the Syrians might expect. Volunteers from Israel.
My name is Tali Shaltiel. I'm here with Israel, an Israeli-based NGO.
My name is Majida Kardosh. I'm here as a medical team. I work as a nurse.
My name is Iris Adler. I live in Tel Aviv. I just finished med school in Tel Aviv University.
We've brought a team from Israel, which is Arab-speaking, and the effect was amazing.
Hearing your language is very important to them, and then getting the instructions where to go, what to do next.
It is though, it is a new island. It's a new island of new, different diversities, multicultural people, Filipinos, Spanish, Africans, mixed people. I met a girl the other day, and I was like, where are you from? She goes, my mom's from China, and my dad is from Africa. I'm like, whoa! Ireland is unique now. We're mixed. Because I can imagine in 10 years' time, there's going to be Barack Obamas walking around, Beyoncé's, and all different sorts. Mixture of people. So the whites are going extinct here now, so we're taking over.
Alan Greenspan and Ben Shalom Bernanke, they're not Eskimos or Irishmen. Ben Shalom Bernanke doesn't mean shalom or good news for you. They're the new elite. They're America and Europe's new ruling class. And how did they take over? In America and Europe, they had to replace the ruling class of our nations with their own. And how did they do this? They did it by teamwork, while they made sure our team was divided with their control of media. They've even made much of our own team hate itself. Jews and media and academia endlessly whine about Gentile evil and racism. Pharaoh, Haman, Hitler, Ahmadinejad, and the never-ending recital of the Holy Holocaust. We don't hear a peep about the biggest mass murder in history, the Jewish-led Bolshevik murders in the gulags of Soviet Russia. No violins, no remembrances, no trials for the murderers, no hunts for the criminals. The media hasn't even told you that the gulag murder machine was dominated by Jews. But read Nobel Prize winner Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He'll enlighten you. They have taught us to hate our own heritage. The Jewish media even tells us that we don't even exist as a people, that race is a myth, and that your heritage is totally unimportant. Of course, they do the same thing to the Palestinian people, Golda Meir, and Jewish leaders to this day say repeatedly that there's no such thing as Palestinians. They tell us Europeans that simply wanting to preserve our non-existing people and our own nations is the height of racism. Read the famous Jewish anthropologist, Jared Diamond. For years, Jared Diamond has told people that race is a social construct and really doesn't exist. Well, think about it. If you believe that your own people don't exist, you really don't have much reason to defend it, do you? But in a Smithsonian article, Diamond praises DNA studies, and he says that they're wonderful because they help Israel prove who is a real Jew. You see, according to Diamond, there are no European people, no Asian people, no Indian people, no African people with a unique genetic and cultural heritage, and for that matter, no Palestinian people. But thank God, he says, DNA proves the Jewish race does exist and that they must have a racist state devoted to them and them alone.
The directives, edicts, the demands, the laws, the entire satanic plan, whatever it may be from day to day, all come from the top. It's a few Jews that went to summer camp. And what did the rabbis teach them at a young age? The young Khazars at summer camp. What did they learn? And what did the rabbis tell them? The rabbis told them, you are superior to everyone. and everyone is just an animal in human form.
Now here's a direct quote from one of them. His name is Steven Steinlight, and he's no ordinary Jew in the street. He was the head of national affairs for the largest and most powerful Jewish organization in America, the American Jewish Committee. Now listen close to this admission of Jewish racism made to his fellow Jews in a Jewish magazine. Quote, "I'll confess that at least like thousands of other typical Jewish kids of my generation, I was reared as a Jewish nationalist, even a quasi-separatist. Every summer, for 2 months for 10 formative years during my childhood and adolescence, I attended Jewish summer camp. There, each morning, I saluted a foreign flag, dressed in a uniform reflecting its colors, sang a foreign national anthem, learned a foreign language, learned foreign folk songs and dances, and was taught that Israel was the true homeland. I was taught the superiority of my people to the Gentiles who had oppressed us. We were taught to view non-Jews as untrustworthy outsiders, people from whom sudden gusts of hatred might be anticipated, people less sensitive, intelligent, and moral than ourselves. We were also taught that the lesson of our dark history is that we could rely on no one." Unquote. You don't have to believe a single word I say here. Don't listen to me, but listen to this major Jewish leader who is still an activist for Jews and for Israel, Dr. Steven Steinlight. If he says that typical Jewish kids are taught they're superior to Gentiles, I believe him. Should I be condemned for quoting him? When he says that typical Jewish kids are taught that Israel is the true homeland, I believe him. The ADL says the idea that Jews have a dual loyalty is anti-Semitism and nothing but a lie. But Steinlight makes clear that many Jews are raised not with a dual loyalty, but undivided loyalty to the Jewish people and Israel. Of course, you're not allowed to know any of this because you might then realize that you have a competitor in your midst who has a different agenda than you have. You might learn that Jews are indoctrinated from birth to act instinctively as a team to take over any company, any organization, any political party, any country in pursuit of Jewish interests. Every Jew has seen the evils of the Holocaust 1,000 times in the media. Every Jew learns how they must stick together against the Gentiles who are portrayed as evil, who might fire up the ovens at any time. A few Jews have been able to overcome this brainwashing by the Jewish religion and by the Jewish extremist media. And I salute those Jews. It must be pretty tough for them. At the same time, every Gentile has learned how evil we Gentiles are. The Jewish mass media even promotes books that say we Gentile Americans are guilty and responsible for the Holocaust, even though we fought a horrific world war, no small part to save the Jewish chestnuts from the fire. While Jews are taught that Gentiles are the enemy, Gentiles are taught they must judge people only as individuals. Could you imagine a football field where one team is united, taught unity and pride, while the other team is told that to fight for the good of their own team is evil, and that they're taught that their own team is guilty of terrible crimes and deserves to lose? That's why the Jews run the Western world. Through their media domination and their teamwork, they have taken over the football field of politics and finance and culture. Steinlight goes on to say something else that's very important. He talks about the immigration policies in America that Jews have led all over the world as well as in my country. And he says, quote, "For perhaps another generation, an optimistic forecast, the Jewish community is thus in a position where it'll be able to divide and conquer and enter into selective coalitions that support our agenda. Divide and conquer, just like Lebanon." Do you understand now why the mass media preaches diversity for non-Jewish nations, but at the same time, Israel's right to be a Jewish state? Diversity is a great thing when it comes to the world. Thank God that we have different nations, cultures, languages, religions, art, music, and even different races that have unique forms of beauty and expression. But diversity and multiculturalism inside nations most often leads to division and conflict. Diversity is a Jewish supremacist weapon to divide and conquer other nations. I'm speaking here not only for my fellow Europeans, whom I do dearly love, but I'm also speaking for the Asians, the Indians, and the Africans of the world. every people on earth should have the right to live, to preserve its heritage and character, and be free and independent. Don't let Jewish globalism destroy the life and freedom of your people. If you don't stand up for yourself, then do it for your children, for they deserve to be free.
Go back to Africa!